The Culture Pop Podcast is brought to you by the law offices of Jacob Imrani.
Accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani, call Jacob.
Hey, it's Mace. If you or a friend or loved one is injured in an accident, the first person you should call is my friend Jacob. When I did this, Jacob was great. He helped me by talking through the next steps, which really put my mind at ease. When you're injured in an accident, you got to have an expert. That's why you call Jacob, just like I did. Call Jacob, 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB, or visit calljacob.com.
Call Jacob.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason along with Sue Kalinske. This is the show where we talk about everything happening in the world of pop culture, and we got a really cool show today. We're going to do a watch along for Sugar Episode 4. Colin Farrell, Sugar on Apple Plus, a show that we absolutely love. Plus, we're going to offer up our thoughts and our reviews of Taylor Swift's new album, Tortured Poets Department. And Emily Hebel, who is a producer at ESPN Los Angeles, is going to join us for that. She is a big-time Swiftie, so we're covering everything today, Sue.
That's very, very exciting.
So, episode 4, Sugar. I'm telling you, I just love this show more and more. I love the fact that he is a movie fan. And he says, you can learn so much from the movies. And we get those clips interspersed with everything. Like right at the very beginning, The Thing, the John Carpenter movie, gets used during his doctor's appointment, which is bizarre. And it's that scene where he reaches into the chest and
it has teeth. Has teeth. And it eats his hands off.
Yes, yes.
And this is the first episode where the clips are not noir.
Good point. I would also argue that some of the clips, instead of for movies, are now clips from Olivia's social media. That's taken the place. Those are the clips, and they're very disturbing. Somebody's following me. Somebody's watching me. Olivia's missing, and now those social media clips suggest she knew something was going on.
And David.
Oh, David. Davey Siegel, the former child star.
You know, it all feels like it's all closing in and a lot of people are going to be in big trouble. But this is crazy, but I'm wondering if Davey sexually assaulted his sister.
I mean, Sugar says that, right? There is a sexual predator in the family and there's a missing girl. So why haven't those two pieces come together? For me, I think the case is there, but it's only episode 4, and it's too early to reach that conclusion. But you're right. It does look like Davey had something to do with Olivia being missing.
Or did the father have something to do with it? Then it goes back to Chinatown with John Huston and Faye Dunaway. And another... Another character that I want to strangle is Melanie. Like, what is going on with her? It's like she's playing both sides of the fence here. And just when I'm starting to trust her as an ally to Sugar, you see her being very secretive with Bernie at the theater.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, what is going on?
I really like Amy Ryan a lot in this show. And right after the doctor's appointment, there's a scene where she talks about everything being so sad and ugly. It's a very poignant scene because this is after she knows what's going on with Davey, right? She knows what's happening. And it's also sad and ugly. And here's this detective who seems like he's very, very serious and dug in and doesn't necessarily have the healthiest view of life. He chases missing people or tries to find missing people. Here he is with trying to cheer up Melanie, saying it's not all sad and ugly. Sea lions, Patti Smith, cypress trees, the sound of your little sister laughing and having fun, going to Paris, all these things. So Sugar is... I mean, I took from that he's an optimist despite what he does for a living.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even like in the other episodes when he says, I really don't like hurting people. And I really believe that he doesn't like hurting people. It's just a casualty of his job.
Yes.
You know?
But now we know that he has certainly taken down Davey. By the way, I don't know the name of the actress who played
his
Taylor.
Mother?
Oh, no, Taylor, the child star.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or Taylor, the actress who ended up being sexually blackmailed by Davey. But I love that scene because it had all those weird kind of jump cuts. She talked about how ugly it was and saying, I'm done with the Seagulls. But I love the way that was shot.
It was beautifully shot and edited. Yeah, it was great. And I'm wondering, like at first I was thinking when Davey and his bully guy went to visit Sugar's
Kenny.
Was that his real mom, you think?
This is a good question. So, yeah, I mean, here are Davey and Kenny. They're trying to get one up on Sugar. They find who they think is his mom, and she sort of plays along with it, but ultimately calls Sugar right afterwards and says, these guys are after you. And I thought there was one line in there that is really, really interesting. She says, they're not stopping until they figure out what you are.
Right.
Not who you are, but what you are.
Yeah, and it just feels like he didn't say, hey, mom. Like, there was nothing endearing for someone who comes across as an endearing kind of guy.
Yes.
So it just didn't seem like that was his mother. And one other thing that I'm trying to figure out, when Bernie came home to his wife.
Right.
And then he went into the other room and he was looking through photo albums and there's pictures of he and a blonde woman and a baby. Who is that? Because, like, I'm so confused. Like, Anna Gunn, now Anna Gunn's character.
Yes.
Is Davey's mother.
Mother, right.
Right? And Davey's Bernie mother. Is her ex-husband, right?
Correct. Correct.
So I'm confused that he looked like he had another family because it didn't look like it was Anna Gunn like years ago. I don't know, you know? But
yeah,
maybe
he had a different family. Maybe, I mean, could that have been Olivia?
I'm wondering if it was Olivia. I don't know. Yeah. It could have been.
Yeah. The other part of the story is, and by the way, we now think we know where Olivia is. It appears she's locked in a basement. We find that out at the end. I assume it's Olivia, don't you?
I assume it's Olivia. Well, because the necklace that Stallings, I don't even know, what do you call her? The woman that's partnered up with him. What do you call him? What do you call her character?
Amal.
It's not Amal. It's his mall. Okay. So she.
I've never used that word in my life, but Amal.
I was thinking it was his mall. So they open up that dresser, and inside that box there's all this jewelry.
Right.
And she takes out a necklace and puts it on, and then you see a video of Olivia, and she's wearing that necklace.
Yes. So we know she's there.
So she's there. And the dress, that was weird. The screening that they went to see of that old film that was a Jonathan Siegel film.
This one is really hard for me to figure out.
Because there's a picture of another woman wearing that dress. Now, was it Olivia wearing that dress? The dress that the actress wore in the film
30
many,
years
many
ago.
Years.
Very weird. Very weird. Okay, so I want to introduce a theory. My first theory. This is weird. I wouldn't necessarily love this if this is the way it turns out, but what if Sugar is not human?
We talked about this. I said he's AI.
Oh, you think he's AI?
Well, that was a theory that I read.
Oh, you read an AI theory?
That he's
not bad. Because he is supernatural. I mean, he's really real.
That weird thing going on.
And I'll tell you, you know, the one thing that jumps out at me, it's a little moment, but he caught that fly with chopsticks at the beginning of the series. And I'm like, not just anybody can do that. And then you add to that his mother saying they're trying to find out what you are. So maybe he's not human.
Well, you know, again, I read something where some reviewer, I don't remember what paper it was from, but they were saying that you're going to be pissed off when you find out the ending.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm up for it.
Yeah, man. I'm just, and the thing too that's bizarre is that the doctor that he went to go see, that doctor was at the secret society dinner.
Yes.
And everything was very, very secretive, which of course it would be. So what, you know, did they do something to him as his doctor? Like, I just don't know. I mean, everybody.
Well, and then there's
complicit.
The intravenous drug.
And he asked him if he was still doing it.
And do you sleep? Do you dream? He asked him.
And then Sugar said, why is he so concerned about this? Why is Ruby so? Why are they both so concerned about it?
Yeah, yeah. Very, very interesting. And of course, we also know that Davey, who is in huge trouble right now because the story is broken that he's been a sexual predator for years and years.
Right.
Stallings called him and said, you're going to face some questions and police are going to be asking you about what if I hear my name.
Name.
If you even say my name, I'm coming after you. So it's all sort of coming together. So you've got AI as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I will throw out there, what about alien?
Well, it's right in that area.
Yeah. By the way, one of the other things I love about the show is that it is so Hollywood. So part of the episode is set at this big retrospective screening of one of Jonathan Siegel's films. Melanie gets recognized at one point because she was a rock star. Davey is a child star. We're like, it's all about movies. We're right in this sort of Hollywood, noir, show business, stuff that I love stuff that is about show business. And this definitely falls into that category. All right. Is he AI? Is he human? Is he an alien? Or is he just a really, really, really good detective?
I don't think that's it.
you don't think that's it?
I don't.
Well, make sure to stick with us. We'll do episode 5 next week. It is the story is fascinating. Colin Farrell is terrific. Amy Ryan is great. James Cromwell. There's an actor named Dennis Kutz, who plays
Butsakaris.
Yeah, Dennis Butsakaris is fantastic. Really great cast. And by the way, we're expecting to get some of the cast on our upcoming Watch Along episode. So make sure you stick with us on that. Our show just keeps getting better and better and more interesting by the week. In the meantime, let's shift gears completely. You ready, Sue?
I'm ready.
I love the ridiculousness of this. A 59-year-old man and a such-and-such woman reviewing an album by Taylor Swift. Have you ever listened to Taylor Swift before?
No.
But you sat down and gave this a listen, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, as did I. So we picked out kind of our favorite tracks. And coming up now, we are joined by our friend Emily Hebel. She is a big Swiftie. She's also the producer of the Travis and Sliwa show on 710 ESPN. Emily, thanks a lot for coming on. How you doing?
Doing good. I'm really excited to come here and talk about my favorite subject in the whole world. So Taylor Swift is bread and butter.
So at Bread and Butter it is. I know from listening to Travis and Sliwa, you've got a love affair with Taylor Swift. And frankly, so does the rest of the world. I mean, she's the biggest star in the world right now. And I got to tell you, I live with the Swifty, which means that Thursday night, we listened to the entire album on Kiss FM right when it came out, along with bonus content from Taylor Swift. So I know other stuff because I've heard Taylor Swift talk about it. And Sue, this is your first big Taylor Swift experience, right?
It is. And just to give you an idea, and I don't know if you guys know this, of how big Taylor Swift is, Berklee College, right, the university, they have a course on Taylor Swift.
Not surprising. Not surprising.
So you can get credit for being a Swiftie.
Amazing.
Very nice. So Emily, you're, first of all, let's lay out the personal dynamics here, which is she does write about past relationships.
Yes.
She's writing here about Joe Alwyn, who she was with, an actor who she was with for 5 or 6 years, I think.
6 years.
And then Matt Healy or Matty Healy, who's the lead singer for the 1975. So
yes.
How many of these songs are about those two guys?
Okay, so I would say about maybe like 6 songs about Joe, and then 2 songs about Travis, and everything else is about Matty Healy.
Really?
So a little bit of background on her like relationships with them. So Joe, she met. Yeah, it's crazy. Joe, she met in 2016. And she met him at the Met Gala. And then they started kind of a whirlwind romance. She was dating someone else at the time, then started dating him. And then that was her longest relationship for probably her entire life, as far as I'm aware. Then she's been friends with Matty Healy since about 2014, kind of like the 1989 era. And they've been on again, off again. There was rumors in the original 1989 era, that they were dating. That wasn't maybe true. And so it's kind of like she broke up with Joe, or it was officially announced that she broke up with Joe in April of last year. And then she dated Matty Healy starting in May. So it was like right from Joe kind of rebound to Matty Healy. And Matty Healy is controversial, to say the least. Not necessarily well liked amongst. So he is like punk rocker. He likes to think he's this like great artist. I like his work.
I like the band. I like the 1975. It's a good band.
Yeah. And Jack Antonoff is the producer too, so that connects him to Taylor as well. But he has had some things on podcasts that Swifties shared around. He's had some controversial takes on a bunch of things. So it's not necessarily, he was kind of like the bad boy, controversial boy that she went to after a long relationship. So he is very tumultuous and honestly might have led her on in a lot of ways, which is why some of the songs are so heartbreaking. So
yes, that's kind of yes. It.
Can you distinguish which songs are about which guy?
Yes. Okay. So a lot of the really angry ones are about Matty. So Matty is kind of for lack of a better word, like an F-boy kind of. He is someone who dates a lot of people and kind of runs through a lot of famous women. And
okay, got it.
She knew that going into it. And so a lot of these angry ones, so like Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, that's about Matty Healy. But Daddy, I Love Him is about Matty Healy. It's about Swifties reactions to Matty Healy. So she's in love with him. Swifties don't like him. She says, but I love him. Don't worry about it. So that's about him. But a lot of these like yearning, sadness, almost acceptance songs are about Joe. So the Midnights album, if you like listen to it, it's almost like a semi-breakup album. She's trying to bargain with him, her, to stay with her. It's like that she's trying to cling on to this relationship in almost ways that she's trying to convince herself. And then this version, the Tortured Poets Department, is any song like So Long London, LOML, Love of My Life. Those ones are more about Joe, because it's more of this acceptance that this part of my life, this person I thought I was going to love for the rest of my life, is no longer part of me.
Right,
so
right.
it's not as like there's not as much bad talking of Joe because I think that they just kind of grew apart and that he didn't want the fame. And Maddie almost was like took advantage of her fame to boost him, as well as he's just every young girl has had an experience with a guy like Maddie Healy, a situationship that kind of strings her along. And like there's one part of, I believe it's in Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, where she talks about how he took her ring that usually goes with her finger, where a ring usually goes, and says, oh, wouldn't this be nice at a dinner party, but also bashing her to his friends. That's Maddie Healy in a nutshell. So
okay,
I feel like this album's a lot of stream of consciousness working through her Maddie Healy, as well as Jack Antonoff revealed on his Instagram that a lot of the...
And Jack Antonoff produces a ton of her stuff, right?
Yes. Jack Antonoff was one of the lead producers on this album with Aaron Dessner. And so he's released on his Instagram some pictures of her with timestamps, a match up to when she was dating Maddie Healy. So
Got it.
We know a lot of this is Maddie Healy.
Okay. So Sue, we've picked out some tracks that we like, the ones that really we were into. And Sue, why don't we start with you? What's the first track that you wanted to talk about from Tortured Poets Department?
Well, I'm hoping it was from Tortured Poets Department because it was like they gave like a list of like all the songs that, okay, that she released. So The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived,
yes,
I loved. And, you know, I am somebody who had some really, really crappy breakups with the same person over the course of 16 years. I was on and off with somebody. Mm-hmm. And when I listen to songs like this, it is so intimate and familiar to me. And that's why I love the song. Like, well, she said, and he was, and I'm, you know, I've been in show business my whole life. He was in show business too. Mm-hmm. So that show business life, your private life in public is so painful.
Yeah.
And when she was saying, you kicked out the stage lights, but you're still performing. I mean, just great lyrics. So that was one of my favorites. And but Daddy, I Love You.
Yeah.
Also, you know, so many people were saying, get out of this relationship. What are you doing? We kind of understand why you're with him because we understand the attraction.
Yeah.
You know, he's cute and he's funny and he has a side to him that we get, but the other baggage is we feel your pain and we feel like we're in this relationship with you.
But also the time when you have a friend or you yourself are going through that, it's hard to convince that person that that person's not right for you because they're like, but I love him, but this is great. And I think that she even knows that.
Yes.
But sometimes you need that heartbreak. Sometimes you need that rebound. But I think she's even joking inside of Daddy, but Daddy, I Love Him, when she says, I'm going to have his babies. No, I'm not, but you should see your faces. That's literally for all the Swifties out there being like, what? She's having a baby? And then you're like, she knows what she's doing.
Right.
I love that song because it brings back a lot of, it's almost like Fearless, like Red era. It's like very fun. It's almost country in a way. Like I can really see that being that influence.
Okay. And,
So one other song that I really, really loved, and I loved it for the fact that it wasn't about relationship. It was about Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
And I just thought it was such a smart song about the reason why people go to Florida. And she talked about times in her life, I guess she was watching the news and it was like a dateline or something. And she was like, this is where people go. People who want to escape who they are, people who kill people, they kind of like hide in Florida. And I read that, what's her name? Emma Stone.
Florence and the, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
Yeah.
Emma Stone is in background vocals on it.
And,
so,
but I heard
Emily
like,
Stone. Yeah.
But I heard that she helped with the lyrics too.
Yeah. So her and Emma Stone have been friends for a really long time, since about 2014 area. They're kind of famous, rising at the same time. And obviously we know Emma's a singer because she's singing La La Land and a bunch of other things. And when I saw that, I was like, that's so great. I love that. And yeah, it's really cool that she got influenced with the lyrics, but I like how, and I don't know, this is your maybe your first Taylor Swift album you've really gone into, but she also did the song called Carolina for Where the Crawdads Sing. And if you do Carolina and Florida together, great double feature of a song. But yeah, Florence Welch on that one is great.
Mm.
Now, I would argue there's a double feature of a song already on this album. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. So the one that's playing on the radio right now is called Fortnite. It's the song she does with Post Malone.
Mm-hmm.
So I read a little bit about this song, and it's about a woman who's fallen in love with a neighbor, and they were together for a fortnight. And the line that keeps coming up is, I love you, it's ruining my life. Mm-hmm. Now, at one point, her character imagines killing the neighbor's wife, and then she fantasizes about killing her own husband. And then there's a line about her flying like a getaway car to Florida. And I wonder if that's not connected to the song she does later in the album with Florence and the Machine, where she says, Florida is one hell of a drug. I need to forget. So take me to Florida. I've got some regrets. I'll bury them in Florida. Do you think that's meant to be like part one and part two of a song?
I could see it as her thinking that they could be both together. I think that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't know if you got the chance to see the music video for Fortnite with Post Malone. It features Ethan Hawke in it, which is fun.
Wow.
Because it's a little Dead Poets Society Easter egg in that music video. But yeah, it has, I would be interested if she releases a Florida music video, because that could be very true what could happen. And they actually connect those stories. But yeah, no, I totally see that they could be brother and sister.
And by the way, let's not bury the fact that Florence and the Machine is on that single, the Florida single. And I love Florence and the Machine. And she is fantastic. There's also a line in the song Florida that I love. And she's got such a knack with these lines. Yeah. And it suggests to me how she views where she is in life right now. She says, my friends all smell like weed or little babies. And I'm like, she's sort of in that in between, like she's not necessarily party girl, but she's also not mom yet. And she feels a little bit left out of all that.
Yeah, she's in her early 30s. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of before and the run up to the release, there was a statue in one of her activations for this that was the goddess of childbirth. And that it was crumbling, and there's ideas around that. She's also referenced in her lyrics before that, like, I could give you my wild, I could give you a child, but that would never be enough. It seems as if she's both grappling with the fact that she's 34, and she's has both friends that have had kids, friends that don't have kids. She's in that stage of, like, maybe I want to have kids, but I think it's in the air. I love that line, too, because it, at first, it, like, sticks out, because, like, saying little babies and weed together in the same sentence is always a little off-putting, but that is your, like, late 20s, early 30s, when everyone's kind of, there are some people in arrested development, and there's some people that are starting to have kids.
Yeah.
It's always weird.
The other cut I really love, and it's the title track, is Tortured Poets Department. I love it because she references the Chelsea Hotel and Dylan Thomas and Patti Smith, and she says, this ain't the Chelsea Hotel. We're modern idiots. I love that because she does. I think she is a poet. I think a lot, like even in that song, she says, who else decodes you? I love that line. Who else decodes you? And so I think she has sort of touches on that magic of that era when the Chelsea Hotel was where all the poets and the artists hang out.
Yeah, I think that she kind of, in the era where she was with Joe, I think did also embrace more of her poeticism, because he is like a trained actor. He likes theater. Like, I think the folklore era is with him, and I think that her being with him helped to embrace that. But she's also, it shows, like, she's a historian of people that came before her. Like, later in the first album, the Clara Bow, or Bow, I can't remember how to say her last name, but like...
Bow, it's quite...
Bo, yeah, that reference is something too. It's like not, it allows people who are listening to this for the first time that might be 15, 16, to go look up those things. Go look up Patti Smith. Like, maybe they don't know who that person is, and then you've got to explore that. And I think that's why I like that she's putting those lyrics and putting specifics in her lyrics sometimes, that not like it's generalized. There's also a connection with those lyrics too with one of her friends, Phoebe Bridgers, who has titles that are those same things too, and they became really good friends. By far, my favorite song on the album is So Long, London. I think, one, I don't know if you guys know this, but on her albums, her track fives are always her most devastating tracks.
Yes.
They're always where she just bares her soul. And like the track five on Midnights was You're On Your Own Kid, which is one of my favorite songs. It was my surprise song for my Eras tour, which is great. But So Long, London almost made me cry the first time listening to it. It's 9 minutes long, which is crazy long. And it's just this
not as long as that song about her scarf with Jake Gyllenhaal. That's a long
not song. As long as that one. But I like it because it's not an angry song. It's this song of acceptance of someone who's not going to necessarily be in your life anymore. But that the idea that like it's not just that she's breaking up with Joe, who was lived in London. They had a house in London the time that they were together. But the idea that, I don't know if you guys have felt this, like you're walking around a city that you know so well, but you know you're going to leave it and you're just taking it in and you're breathing it in and just like, I don't know, there's just a feeling about it. And even the beats are like a walk. So yes, you can like walk this and you can feel that she's walking around the streets of London, not even listening to music, just like thinking about this song and understanding that like that time has passed. With Joe, that's my favorite song on the album by far. I also love Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. But I love, love, love Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. And I think she took some lessons from the Florence Welch studio sessions to get her growl out, to get her like deep-seated, like almost like witchy tones of this when she screams Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. I think that song is both about, in reference to Antihero, which she says like, I'm a monster lurching towards your favorite city. So she knows her outsized influence, not only on her personal life, but the lives of everyone around us. But the idea of who's afraid of little old me, you should be. The idea that she has so much power and we have no idea really what she's going to do with it. Like she could do terrible things. She could do great things.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The idea that she it's just like letting that go in this. And I think that I just really love when she just like wails and screams and like lets it out. And that's also why I love like Florence Welch, Florence the Machine, because they kind of let this like female rage out. And then another song, again, I love the Joe ones. I love Love of My Life. And so if she starts off the song saying like, you're the love of my life. And then she ends the song saying, you're the loss of my life. And I think that a lot of us have figured a time where it was like a right person, wrong time, or wrong person, wrong time. And then you just know that like, it's, you're going to keep it with you. You're going to go on to love other people. She knows that he's going to love other people. But the idea that it's a loss of your life, it reminds me of like past lives. It reminds me of Casablanca. Like it reminds you of these things of like these like huge romantic movies. About this like right person, wrong time. And that's also my favorite genre of movies. So I really associate it with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what kind of reminds me of Sheryl Crow, her Eric Clapton song, My Greatest Mistake, you know?
Yeah.
Wrong time, you know? Yeah. But I wanted to bring up Clara Bow again because I was talking to Steve yesterday about this. I read that Stevie Nicks wrote a poem about Taylor Swift or for Taylor Swift. And it was that song and that line about you're on your own, kid, which resonated with her after Christine McVie passed away. And that's meant so much to her to the point where she talked to the other Fleetwood Mac band members and said, I don't know if we could go on without Christine.
Mm-hmm.
She was so a part of us. And I guess because that they were the two women in the band that they just were so close and they protected each other.
That's interesting because you could say that, yeah, you know, Stevie Nicks, amazing poet, her music, you know, is the lyrics are amazing. That there is sort of a a line between Stevie Nicks and Taylor Swift. That, you know, in the same way, a wordsmith, a poet like that, that I'm sure that letter from Stevie Nicks has got to be really meaningful to Taylor.
Yeah. And I think there's portions of the Eras Tour where she makes direct homages to the way that Stevie would perform, like especially in August when she has her like dress flowing and she lets like the witchiness out, and you know, the parts of Willow where she again like has this kind of like witchy, almost cosmic nature. And I think that, you know, Stevie kind of started that in the mainstream of how she performed. And I think Taylor is in the line again of this this Rumors is so autobiographical. It's so what Fleetwood Mac was going through at the same time. And like, that's what Taylor does in all of her lyrics. Like, if you ever wonder what was going on in Taylor's head when she was dating XYZ, like, you can, she puts it onto the page. She rarely does podcasts. She doesn't do interviews. She doesn't do anything like that. She lets her words speak for herself. And I think that's also what Fleetwood Mac has done through the portion of her. So I think that they, Stevie blessing that, I think is pretty awesome.
Well, there's also, you know, I used to joke about the fact that when you're in a band with bandmates and you're, because it was so incestuous, Fleetwood Mac, they were all either married or dating one another. And so if something was going on in your life with, you know, like what was happening with Stevie Nick and what's his name? Not Mick Fleetwood.
Lindsey Buckingham.
Lindsey Buckingham. And that song came out, You Can Go Your Own Way. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, while they were rehearsing the song, if she was like, do you have something you want to talk to me about? You know, like, he's writing about, like, her, like not being in a relationship with any or there anymore while they're in the band together. So that would be so horrible.
Yeah, that song Silver Springs, too, like that one performance where she just like sings at him. And it's like, you'll never get away from the voice of the woman that loves you. Like, again, like that. Taylor can take from that performance, and she has, and be like, you'll never get away from the sound of the lyrics that I write about you, this like haunting things that I have about you. Additionally, that same same message goes for Kim Kardashian with Thank You, Amy. So
yes. Thank You, Amy, which is on that album too, right?
That is my all-time favorite song.
Yeah.
All of everything that she wrote in these two albums. It is so brilliant. It is scathing. It is smart. Oh my God. Even the way she wrote the title of it with the capital K-I-M. I mean, it is just, it was like, fuck you. You know, it was such a great fuck you to somebody. and so deserved.
It's not exactly subtle. It's funny because it's like subtle, but not like, it's not super subtle. You're putting in the title that K-I-M is all capitalized. But I really love because like North West, Kim's eldest daughter, is a huge Taylor Swift fan. They went to the Eras Tour. Like, it's so funny because it's like the end of that song is she's talking about how your daughter will come home singing a song and only me and you will know that it's about you. Except for we all know it's about Kim. Same for the song of Reputation called This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. There's many songs written about Kim and Kanye in this, but I think that we all were like, okay, Taylor, you're not letting go of this grudge, and that's okay. Like,
I loved it. The spray tan sculpture. I mean, it was just, oh man, it was such great payback.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, I was going to, no, I'm sorry, finish.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's the wonderful thing about being a Swiftie and like knowing about her life is that you can listen to these lyrics and get so much. It's basically a gothic album. It's a gothic album of all these things that she was going with. But yeah, I think that's like one of the best things about being a Swiftie.
All right. Well, if anybody hasn't heard, Taylor Swift has a new album out.
Really?
She pretty much knocked everything off the front page, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Emily, by the way, Sue, Emily knows as much about movies as anybody I know. We will definitely have her back on the show. She's terrific on the air, and she knows her stuff, and she's part of this hip Alamo Drafthouse cinephile kind of scene, which I love. So we'll definitely have you back, Emily. And I feel like I know so much more about Taylor Swift and can enjoy the album even more. So thank you very much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, there you have it. We've covered a lot of ground, Sue. We've got Sugar Episode 4, and we've got Taylor Swift, Tortured Poets Department. Oh, look at
Maxwell. He keeps on jumping up to get my attention, and I just, I gave in.
You can never go wrong with a cutaway to a puppy dog.
Okay.
Ever. Hey, listen, if you're listening right now, first of all, we're going to continue to watch along on Sugar, so next week we'll have Episode 5 for you. In the meantime, if you are watching this channel on YouTube, subscribe to it. You can leave us your review of Sugar. You can leave us your review of Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department. Also, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please take a minute, subscribe to the podcast, and you can leave us a 5-star review and a rating of some kind. That would be fantastic. Sue, it is great seeing you. It's even better seeing Maxwell.
Oh.
And we will see everybody next time on the Culture Pop Podcast.